It's Cap and J-Hood on Chicago's Home for Sports. Follow the show on Twitter at CapJHood. This is ESPN 1000.
Two in the great city on the home of the White Sox. They kick it off for their home schedule today. Rain, rain, stay away. Carmen Yerk live from PointsBet Sportsbook in Crestwood, 10 to 2. Special 1 hour pregame with Connor McKnight, 2 o'clock. And then the Royals and the White Sox tee it up at Guaranteed Rate Field. Then the postgame show, then Black and Abdallah. We're all over it right here on your home for the White Sox, ESPN 1000.
So looking forward to opening day. Well, I was looking forward to the season because of all the question marks going into the season, like Tony La Russa retired away from the game and then comes back to manage the ball club. The young players, we got to be able to add a little taste of it last year with the Sox being in the playoffs and seeing Abreu be a real leader for this team. Watching Robert, watching Aloy, and watching these young players come about. And then solidifying your pitching staff by having Lance Lynn be part of the rotation. A lot of question marks coming in, but there was good feeling across the board about the White Sox. And the reason why is because it felt new. It feels fresh. Post Renteria, it feels different because since you got a glimpse of it this past year, you think that the window might be open for this White Sox team.
Correct.
For the next 5 to 10 years. At least that's a hope for me as a Sox fan.
Yep. And with Aloy going down, Andrew Vaughn, hey man, I know you only played A ball. You were a highly coveted guy when they drafted you. Find a way. And I think it's going to work out.
Well, I mean, ultimately, when you saw the roster, when it came north, you said, well, there's a lot of quality depth in this team. If someone went down, others can pick up the slack offensively. Mm-hmm. The last thing that you want for your favorite team is to have a slump all up and down the roster, up and down the lineup every day. And so when I look at Anderson being out for a few weeks, I said, okay, if it's not going to be Anderson, then maybe it's going to be Robert picking up the slack. Maybe that's going to be Abreu. Maybe that's going to be Robert. But when you look at this lineup, there's a number of guys that can hurt you on a regular basis. So when everyone's healthy, you're looking at one through seven, getting it done offensively. But ultimately for me, Cap, which has been kind of the bane of my existence as a White Sox fan, is that, yes, you can hit the baseball. Of course, you can hit the baseball. That's been the story. Even when the Sox were bad, they could hit. But you cannot have 5 and 6 out innings, meaning that you're making multiple mistakes in an inning. You can't have
Agreed.
That. You cannot have that, and especially from right field. When I saw Eaton once again, not only missing the cutoff man, but no one behind him, Grandal behind the plate, problems at second base. That you cannot be sloppy defensively.
Yep, you can't give extra opportunities.
But I like what the Sox have, though. I mean, 3-4 on a West Coast road trip in which they don't usually play well. We quote the stats for the last since 2017, going into the series against the Angels, 38-65 or something like that. Not good since 2017. So at least a 3-4 road trip, I'll take it.
Okay, here's the one thing I would say to you about that stat. The White Sox were rebuilding then. So I think it skews that stat. They traded away Sale. They traded away Quintana. They went, we're tearing this thing down. So yes, they were bad on the West Coast. You can't argue with the numbers, but let's just be clear here. They weren't trying to win then.
Yeah, you don't get a pass. We're not doing the show in Phoenix. You know, I don't care what they were doing. You just didn't play well. That's not good enough for me.
Correct.
See, the Sox to me, since in 2017, were not 2013, 2014 Cubs bad. It wasn't tore down to its studs.
They were pretty close. Well, how many of the games did they lose?
The 90 lost ball clubs, the epic losses as Theo took over the job.
No, I'm talking about the Sox. What was in 2017? What was the White Sox record?
I don't know. All I know is that from Robin through to Renteria was over 800 losses, and that was hard to take, for sure.
The Chicago White Sox in
67-95.
Okay, and what were they in 2016? That was the year they. When did they trade?
78-84 that year.
78-84. How about 2018?
In 18, they were 62-100.
So I'm talking about. They were as bad as those Cubs teams.
Yep. Still not acceptable.
But there was a plan.
There's no but, man.
Yes, there is.
No,
there was
not
a plan.
No, but there's no but.
But you don't have what you have today if you don't do that.
Okay, but I still don't accept teardowns in this town. You should always be competitive. That's the whole point. It's the whole point.
Yeah, I have no problem if you have a plan and you execute said plan. And I think Rick has executed that plan. Now, you have to take the next step. But when you lose whatever that was, 95, 90, whatever, 100 games, I got no problem if when you emerge on the other side, I go, wait a minute. I got Abreu. I spent on Grandal. I've got Tim Anderson. Oh, I got Yoan Moncada. I got Eloy Jimenez. Oh, I spent whatever I spent to get Luis Robert. I got Lucas Giolito in that deal. I just went and spent and got Lance Lynn. I just paid $56 million or whatever it was to get Dallas Keuchel. Guess what? I want Liam Hendricks, too. They came out on the other side. Your club, the window's open. They have spent and they have acquired talent. Great. I got no problem with a rebuild.
That's great. That's great, Dave. The window's open, but you got to go through it.
Yeah, that's
all that activity sounds great on paper, but you've got to be able to execute at some point. See, here's the point. In this city, you can accept it. I don't care. I'm talking about from my standpoint as a fan. Any of the teams in town, you should not accept the rebuild. You shouldn't have to. The team should always be competitive. It is Chicago, after all. That's my whole point. Like, we're not Atlanta. You don't have to do that. In some markets, it's acceptable because they look at sports as, I'll watch on occasion, or I'm not really fully invested. Well, we're fully invested here. That's my point. Like, all those names are great. But once you won the championship, then you feel great about it. But right now, it's just names. Names that should be able to get you there, but they're not there yet.
Correct. They have to walk through the door now.
Yeah, but the idea that it's cool to lose 90 games, 100 games, because, you know, eventually we're going to win, well, clicking our heels doesn't get you a championship. Winning gets you a championship.
Hoodie's right. Like, it's easy to look now today and say, okay, we're past the time when we had to take our, quote, medicine and struggle. But at the same time, the bad records, what has that netted them? What high picks to draft Nick Madrigal and Andrew Vaughn? Mm-hmm. Now, those are intriguing players, but obviously Nick Madrigal right now, you know, the last few weeks.
Well, by doing that, you also got Yoan Moncada. You got Michael Kopech.
Okay, they traded Chris Sale. Correct. They traded Chris Sale to land Moncada and Kopech. Those players who were coming through the system didn't affect the amount of money the team needed to spend back in 2017 or 18 to be more competitive. Look at what the Tampa Bay Rays do. I mean, they operate on a shoestring budget, and every year they're competitive. And then what happens? That's when right. Guys get more expensive, like Blake Snell, they ship them off and they make trades for younger players. Mm-hmm. You can do both. Now, it may not always work out to the best of your ability, but it is possible to tear your roster down and still compete with younger players.
See, you're the guy that still has all those connections, all the front offices in town. I'm still the guy in the bleachers at guaranteed rate. Because even though I'm privy to all that information, the fan in me still believes that our team should succeed. Now, here's the difference. The book, The Plan, right? Mm-hmm. Available in bookstores everywhere. Mm-hmm. There's an additional chapter to The Plan. Check that out now. Check out The Plan. Get yourself that book because it tells you the story of Theo Epstein and after Theo Epstein. Now, when Theo came to town, I told you that as a White Sox fan, knowing what he did with the Red Sox, I said, well, the mood's going to change here.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'm thinking that all the losses that the Cubs had, you shouldn't have to go through that as a Cubs fan. Every team has their ups and downs, but not to the point where it's just awful, where it's just unwatchable, where people are tuning out in droves, where you're sitting there doing the pre and post wondering who's watching after bad losses. You dealt with that.
Yeah.
But as the fan and you had to say, well, this sucks. Yeah, there's a plan, but do you know it's going to work? Now, I knew that it would work because it's Theo, because I think that was – before Baylor won the championship, it was the most remarkable rebuild in the history of sports, the Cubs.
Because I saw how bad it was.
Yes.
Do you know how they used... This is a true story. And they gave me a quote on the record to confirm it when I wrote that book. Do you know when they would sit down in January and they'd say, hey, how are season ticket renewals? And the team sucks. Hold on a minute. We've refilled the fax machine 3 times. That's the answer. They had no computer program that goes, Jonathan Hood, 2744 Church Street, has been a season ticket holder for 31 years. Prior to that, his great-grandfather bought the seats, handed them down. They knew none of that. Like, how does a major league operation run that poorly?
Right. I get it. Oh, because it's mom and pop and they had no expectations.
Because
it's not like the Cub fan today.
Because they were a corporate-owned team run like a mom-and-pop grocery store. Mm-hmm. Now, they're a family-owned team run like a corporation.
Where fans have turned the heat up to 10.
Correct.
To win.
Right.
Because they give a damn.
They give a damn.
So I just don't like when organizations try to tell us, well, here we have a plan or we're going to lose a little bit. Like, that, it's funny. The White Sox wouldn't use the word rebuild for a long time. Like, mm-hmm. Kenny didn't want to say rebuild because it sounds like starting over,
right.
Meaning that I'm accepting when I know he doesn't accept losing. I know he doesn't.
He doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, he's intolerant to losing. So he really didn't want to use the word R. So when you use the word rebuild. But Rick did. And that was a complete sea change for the White Sox because Rick was pretty transparent, like, hey, we're going to have to do some things here to get to winning. Still didn't believe it until we start seeing this team actually do something.
Right.
As a matter of fact, the Blackhawks have just done that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So just so you know, we're going to do a little retooling. I think they used the word rebuild a little bit too prematurely when we had Bowman on.
Right.
It's more retooling. But still, man, you got to make sure that you keep your team as competitive as possible. Especially in a big market like that, we care more. So it means more.
Correct.
That's my whole thing.
312-332-3776. It's opening day on the South Side. It's the first day of the Masters Golf Tournament, and our phone lines are hopping. So that's where we're going. Your calls, lots of topics. That's next.
Take that.
You don't have to wait till you're in your car to hear what Cap and Jay Hood are talking about. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
The phones, we go. 312-332-3776. How about we go to Richard up in Wilmette? Richard, what's up?
Morning, guys. First of all, I want to say adding Hoodie to your show is just freaking awesome. He is a dude, man, I tell you.
That guy's awesome. Well, that's how we created this show, and I left the old one in the rearview mirror, so I got to be with my friend.
Yeah, you know, he's been a great addition to my night show, Richard, so you're right about that. He's been a great addition to the old Under the Hood show.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So here's my point on Wilson. I'll give you a simple analogy. You got a house. The foundation's got cracks. It's falling apart. The framing is getting rotten. But you're going to spend $15,000 putting on a new roof. What's the point? Yeah, you bring Wilson in and the rest of the team doesn't have it. You got to be thinking clearer. Your thinking is muted by your cremation and you're being buried alive. So let's think smartly here.
But you have not ever had a quarterback since Sid Luckman. Where are you getting one?
Got to work the draft, man. You got to get smarter. Pace has got to go. We got to get somebody that knows what they're doing. Have a great day, guys.
You too. Thanks, Richard. 312-332-3776. Let's go to Jeff in St. Anne. Hey, Jeff, what's up, man?
Hey, guys. Good morning. Love your show.
Appreciate you.
You guys are awesome.
Thanks.
Hey, similar to the previous caller, we've got Russell Wilson out in Seattle who has a decent defense, a crappy offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
Decent receivers, and you're going to bring him to Chicago in basically the same scenario. What's going to be different that Russell Wilson is going to turn Chicago around?
Well, first of all, we've never had a quarterback like this. Somebody who can execute Matt Nagy's system. This guy's going to the Hall of Fame. He is a great football player. That is without question. He's a great player. So I don't see a downside to bringing him in. Now, if you're telling me it's four number ones, two number twos, and two starters, yeah, no, that's insane. But if you said your next three number one picks and you can get Russell Wilson, I'm in. I'm all in.
And that's where I guess as a fan I get real squirmy is you're leveraging or you're foregoing potentially 5 years and Russell Wilson spends half his time on the back in the offensive backfield. I don't know what we've gained.
Well, don't you want to be able to have a quarterback that you could depend on for the next 5 years plus?
I'm going to be out of business for 5 years because I've traded all my draft picks away.
So you can't negotiate to get more draft picks, right? Since you make that deal, that means no more deals. Well, I'm saying
we haven't done it yet.
That's not the point. That's not the point. The point is that one, if you make the trade, you solidify the quarterback spot. And from there, if you're missing draft picks, it doesn't mean you can't trade back into the draft. It doesn't mean that you're handcuffed because you don't have the draft capital. You can always get back in the draft, Jeff. It's not a death sentence at all.
And the interior part of your offensive line, Jeff, is really good. James Daniels, Cody Whitehair, Mustafa, Bars. You just have to go get yourself a left tackle. That's what they need to go get. Appreciate the call, buddy.
I mean, the idea that, like, I can't have Russell Wilson because, well, then I don't have any draft pick. Like, so you mean that means that you're closed for business. Once you've done Russell Wilson, the next 5 years you can't get back into the draft? You can't get quality picks? Of course. It's all part of negotiations.
Listen, will it hamstring you a little bit in the draft? Of course.
Get back in it.
We did this exercise months ago, or maybe a month ago, when this first came up. I read you, remember, in three successive drafts that the Los Angeles Rams landed Jared Goff, Aaron Donald, and Todd Gurley in succession. And then I asked you, if you had to, if push came to shove, and a team wanted to trade Donald, Goff, who was a bust, and Todd Gurley for Russell Wilson, would you make that deal? And you know what? That's a hard question, but you might still consider trading those three players for Russell Wilson.
Todd Gurley's going on his third
That's
team in 3 years.
That's as good as it gets in three successive drafts. I know people like to believe that with every first-round pick you're getting a Hall of Famer. The truth is you're not. You might, if you're lucky, land a Hall of Famer once a decade in your first-round picks. And Ryan Pace has clearly proven to you he's not close to drafting a Hall of Famer in the first round.
Right. I remember we had Joe Banner on, who used to be the president of the Browns and the Eagles as well. He said, guys, 50% of number one picks don't even make it, let alone go to the Hall of Fame. He said, so you're taking two of them to get Khalil Mack, who is a Hall of Famer? That's a no-brainer. No-brainer. Appreciate the call. 312-332-3776, baseball. Jerry in Park Ridge. What's up, man?
Hello. Hey, guys. Morning.
Hey, what's Jerry?
Long-time Sox fan. Wasn't anti La Russa selection. Thought he'd do okay until yesterday in the sixth inning, I guess it was, with leaving Foster in. It was just absolutely mind-boggling that, first of all, he didn't have anybody warming up for most of the time Foster was in there, and he's got Bummer and Crochet. Bummer's basically lights out, and Seattle's bringing up left-handed batters who probably are batting like 100 against Bummer. He's got that wipeout slider, and you're trying to at least save the game or have the game tied, and I'm afraid he's semi-asleep in the dugout, and I hate to say that about him, but I don't think Tony La Russa from 20 years ago would have done that.
Well, here's what I like, Jerry. At least he said he made the mistake. It's not like Ross and Peterson on the other side of town saying, just lay back and enjoy it. That's what they said after the loss yesterday. Like, hey, it's a long season. Just relax. There's no relax. You're trying to win as many games as possible.
Here, take a listen.
Well, we were in an excellent position going to the sixth inning, and I think the best way to explain the sixth inning, I mean, I did a really lousy job of managing that inning. And it really hurt our chances to win.
Can you expand on that, Tony?
I'd rather not. You watch the game. I did a lousy job.
It irked him, Jerry. So at least he fell on the sword, right?
I give him credit for that. I mean, I just don't understand having guys not up and warming up. It's just
it's brutal.
It was crazy, but. Let's give him whatever you want to call it.
Nobody's going to be perfect, but you're right. That mistake can't happen. That was a bad decision, and he fell on his sword, and hopefully that doesn't happen again.
It will.
Garrett Crochet.
Cap is a long season, and more than likely it will.
Yeah, in 162?
Yes.
No one's going to be perfect. When did Garrett Crochet pitch last? He pitched on Tuesday. He had pitched on Tuesday. So he had pitched Saturday, he had Sunday, Monday off, he pitched Tuesday, they elected not to use him on Wednesday. So there you go. Back to the phones, John's in Rolling Meadows. Hey, John, what's up, man?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Hello, John.
I'm good. You know, the thing that scares me about this whole Russell Wilson wanting to leave thing, you see, now, if I'm the Seattle GM right now, I'm calling around to see who can give me what for Wilson in case he does decide that he wants to go somewhere else. One of the places I'm going to check is Green Bay, because they have a quarterback that's from the West Coast that might want to try to finish his season closer to home so his family can come out and see him. And, you know, Russell's family is here in the Midwest, and I can see a scenario where he goes to Green Bay and Rodgers heads to Seattle.
Yeah, I don't see that at all. Aaron is estranged from a large portion of his family, so I don't think he's thinking, well, if I get to Seattle instead of... First of all, he makes, and appreciate the call, John, he makes what, $35 million a year? Yeah, he could charter any plane he needs to if he wants to go from Green Bay home, if he's going to go see some family members.
Mm-hmm.
Then he and his brother don't even speak, correct?
That is correct.
So, yeah, I don't think he's thinking, can I get from Green Bay to Seattle? I don't see it. I don't. And Russell Wilson listed four teams. The Green Bay Packers weren't one of them. So I don't see that at all. 312-332-3776. We're going to talk to Rick Hahn in a couple of minutes. But Q, hey, Q, what's up, man?
Hey, Captain O.J. Hill, what's going on?
What's up, dog?
Hi, Q.
Yeah. I just wanted to know, so many, quarterbacks and receivers going, in the draft at the first round. I just want to know, do you think we have a chance of getting Penei Sewell?
You're talking about Penei Sewell?
Yeah.
No, he's the number one left tackle in the draft, and all accounts, it appears he will be long gone in the top 10.
But you don't think he might drop because so many receivers is going or might be going in the first round
to 20
quarterback
to 20?
Yes, maybe because I don't know if the Bears might go up and try to go up in the draft. Maybe they have a chance to get
him. Yeah, I don't see a scenario. There was talk that at one point he was going to go in the top 5, and we appreciate your call, Q. I don't see Penei Sewell falling. I think the Bears hold out hope, the kid at Northwestern, Slater,
yep,
that he could slide 14, 15, and they could go up and get him. Penei Sewell, he's what, 6'7", 335, and there, I retweeted a video of him doing the cone drill.
Yeah, I saw that.
335 pounds doing that cone drill. It was insane to watch.
Of course.
What an athlete.
Well, I got my St. Patrick's Day White Sox shirt on. I'm ready to go for opening day. Why don't we talk White Sox next?
That's it. Rick Hahn, General Manager, Executive VP of the White Sox, next.
Take that.
Cap. J-Hood.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Watch the show on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago.
All right, it's opening day for the home portion of the schedule. Sox fresh off a series win in Seattle.
Yes.
Disappointing yesterday, but you're not going to win them all, man. You're not.
Yeah, I understand that. You can't win them all either when you got to choose cremation over being buried. The idea that you're afraid of both while you're dead is crazy. You got to talk to Rick about that. He's going to straighten you out.
I wonder if he's made a decision on something like that.
I don't think he wants to do.
Anyway, White Sox GM, VP, our guy. He's a great friend of the show over the years. Man. He is Rick Hahn of the White Sox. He joins us next. Hey, Rick, happy opening home portion of the schedule day.
Hey, thanks, guys, and thanks for having me.
Can you believe my partner here, Rick? We talk about cremation versus being buried, and he says, well, I'm afraid, I'm claustrophobic. And then he's like, how do you know? If you're dead, how do you know? Could you please straighten him out?
Well, I haven't thought about those options since about the sixth inning of last night's game. So.
Exactly.
So let's ask you about, look, I know it's everyone in the game goes, it's a marathon, not a sprint. We as fans, we overreact to everything. So how do you feel your team is right now?
Look, there's obviously some things we need to tighten up. That said, starting off on the West Coast for 7 days in a row, playing every day, having suffered a few injuries, coming out of there with a series win and 3-4, although it could have been better, it obviously could have been a lot worse. So while we know there's a few things that need to get better and will get better, probably primarily the defensive play, so far we're off to a decent start, and it's time to tighten up the things that need to be cleaned up and build some momentum here as we start the home portion of the schedule.
Rick, being around the White Sox for a long time, I know things change from year to year, decade to decade. How much time do Major League Baseball clubs usually put in as far as infield and outfield work? Because it's so busy. You got, you know, trying to make sure you're watching tape and going through batting practice. So how much time is really put into those things on a daily basis?
It is tight, and do keep in mind that under the still existing COVID protocols, we are a little bit restricted on how long guys can be at the ballpark for their own safety. So the window to do the work is a little smaller than what we deal with in a traditional year. That said, certainly it was one of the main priorities in spring training for Tony and the staff, was preaching the fundamentals and working repeatedly on it. And as we go into the home schedule and get into that natural rhythm of the season, I know it's going to continue to be a priority for guys. And look, it obviously was not a great series or a great start to the season from a defensive standpoint in particular, but that is an area we feel pretty good about. We're not expecting a Gold Glove center fielder to drop a fly ball that he makes 99, or perhaps more than that, even 99 and a half times out of 100. Eaton had some adventures out there, but he's obviously traditionally a very strong defender as well. So these are things that over the course of 162 are certainly not only going to even out, but we expect we'll get to their normal plus level over the course of the summer.
Rick, how do you deal with Aloy? I guess you just assume he's gone for the year, and then if we get him back early, awesome. Andrew Vaughn's getting this great opportunity. At what point do you and your staff start looking around going, hold on a minute, can we acquire that guy? Can we sign that guy who's not with anybody right now? How do you make that determination? At what time?
You know, I think you hit the nail on the head, is you have to approach it like Aloy is going to be gone for the year, just from a coverage standpoint, and if at some point he comes back sooner and we wind up with the embarrassment of options out there, so be it. That's a good problem to have. And quite frankly, we started the conversations about how do we plug this thing, both internally and externally, right as soon as it happened, the day after we knew what we were dealing with. So I think there's sort of the traditional axiom in baseball where you spend 2 months figuring out what you need, you spend the next 2 months going out to plug the holes that you know exist, and you spend the last 2 months letting them play. And that's probably the general timeline, because really teams aren't looking to move players so early in the season. It does take probably till closer to early June before talks get real substantive. Certainly, it's not as if there's a great amount of impactful position players on the move right around opening day. Teams are pretty set in their rosters, and they're going to let their guys go play. So I would say, you know, we let this thing go for a couple of months as we continue to explore our options and see where we're at come summer as we get closer to the deadline.
Rick, how do you evaluate the leadoff spot in 2021 versus maybe 10 or 15 years ago? Is it as important as it once was?
I tell you what, we sure love having Tim Anderson in that spot, the way he sets the tone, the way he brings the energy and certainly can get the offense going for us each and every night when he's in there. Is that different than, say, when a Ricky Henderson brought that kind of energy to the position? No. But is it different from, you know, in recent vintage where you want to have a primarily your best OBP man in that spot? Perhaps that's a little different. We're blessed in having TA, and when he's healthy, obviously, and hopefully he'll be back once the 10 days are up a week from the day. But if we didn't have that, then perhaps we are looking at perhaps a little more traditional who's going to be the best table setter in terms of getting on base and perhaps being able to steal a base for us if needed in that situation.
Michael Kopech's pitched 4 innings. He's looked phenomenal. I mean, I watched him in spring training. Yeah, okay, we'll see. He hadn't pitched August would have been 3 years since he'd thrown a pitch in a major league game, not a spring game. How do you envision his usage? Is there a number of innings you're like, I don't care where we are, he's not throwing a ball past that number of innings?
We do not have that magic number. We don't have that sort of, once we get here, we're going to have to shut him down, similar to what we've seen other clubs deal with in recent years. Instead, we have a general idea where we think he should get to or could get to over the course of the summer, and we understand that, quite frankly, none of us are smart enough to know if that's going to be too little or too many or just right. And we're going to have to continue to be flexible and open-minded with how he looks over the course of the summer. So far, obviously, it's gone really well. The multi-inning reliever option for him, where he's come in and helped stabilize us in a couple of wins, like that's a really good use of him in leverage and giving us length and taking some of the load off of both the starters and the guys in the pen. So we've been real pleased with it so far. I foresee it continuing along this path for the foreseeable future, but if we need to adjust it to perhaps increase his load or decrease his load, depending on how he looks and feels and what our eyes are telling us, we'll do so over the course of the summer.
You've taken care of Mercedes with a car dealer deal, right? I mean, where would one find a Mercedes dealership where your mean is? Where can we find
it? That's got to be a layup for Brooks Boyer and his people, I would say.
Yes. I mean, that's a must-watch now. You have to be surprised. It must be an eye-opener to see the start he's had, because now he's a social media favorite. You can't wait to see what he does next.
Your gift shop announced that they now have your mean Mercedes jerseys on sale. They had none in stock a week ago.
Hell yeah.
That's just how we drew it up. I mean, that's just good.
Yeah.
it's great for a number of reasons. You mentioned the social media presence for Yerm. He's been talking for a year now about his fans in Chicago, and it's almost been like a little bit of an inside joke about all the Yerm fans in Chicago, when it really was sort of your more diehard Sox fans who followed the minors who knew about Yermin, and the fact that all he's done at every level is hit. On a personal level, you feel just great for the kid, because he's been through so much, played in the Pecos League, been released. Obviously, we took him in the minor league phase of the Rule 5, which is really sort of an under-the-radar way of acquiring players. And it's just a great result for him, and a nice tribute to our player development staff and our scouting staff that identified and helped continue to advance this player, who's obviously got a great deal of talent and a huge personality that people really are going to embrace.
Here's one that I've wanted to ask you for a long time. Like, if you went back to 1992, armed with the analytical data and knowledge you have today, I've had people in the game go, that would be like shooting polka dot fish in a striped barrel. It wouldn't be fair, the advantage you'd have. What is the next great frontier? Because from my seat, I would bet it's scientific data that can foreshadow injury.
That you took the words out of my mouth. Not exactly, but I was going to say health. Health is the next, is the area that ideally, if we could somehow improve our ability to project future injury and obviously thereby avoid it by altering usage or training or nutrition or whatever element we could use as a driver to keep guys healthy. I mean, that's we talk about over the course of the summer, like, what's the number one thing you want to do? Stay healthy. Every team says that. If we can be blessed with good health, if we can avoid what the baseball gods have in store for us, it's a huge competitive advantage if you're able to, I don't know, pick a number. You have to only field 30 players over the course of the summer instead of getting into the 40s like most of us wind up having to do due to health and misfortune. So if there's a way to crack that code, that would be that next advantage, and you'll be probably talking to either my successor or my successor's successor 20 years from now saying, that was the code I'm glad they broke at some point.
Rick, how do you measure, like a Vaughn or with Nick Madrigal, how do you measure the draft status of a player versus playing time and the amount of playing time that that player receives or earns?
When you're talking once they get to the big leagues?
Yes.
I think we have to keep in mind, not just with Vaughn and Madrigal, but even with Luis Robert. just as we did with Moncada when he came up, that there still is going, and Eloy, that there's still going to be this element of development at the big league level. There's still going to be, you know, bumps in the road. There's still going to be the occasional mental lapse or the game speeding up to a level that, you know, forces them into an uncomfortable situation occasionally. The only way to get through that is through having them out on the field and having them get those repetitions. I understand the idea that you want to sort of ease these guys in and put them in the best position to succeed and have success early and then build off that success. So we're going to be cautious with exactly how any young players deployed during their debut. But ultimately, we know that talent is going to win out, and these guys need to play. And over the course of 6+ months, they're going to get ample opportunity to show who they are and what they can do.
So as I watched Billy Donovan coach the Bulls, they had a couple games that they literally just gave away at the end. And both times, he went to the media and said, "That's not on them, that's on me. I should have taken a timeout and advanced the ball there. I should have had that guy out of the game. That's on me. Don't blame them, blame me." Your manager did the same thing last night. I love coaches and managers who are managing with confidence, are going, "Hey, man, I know I'm good at what I do." And Tony said, "That was a lousy job of managing in the sixth inning. That's on me." When you hear that, how do you feel about that?
I mean, I'm with you, Cap. I think that's great. I, not just for Tony, but, you know, as you mentioned, and Billy Donovan or anyone. You just, whether it's sports or politics or education or whatever, you love it when people actually take ownership of their decisions. Now, in the sports context, it perhaps can get a little overstated, because obviously it's the players needing to execute the plan. The manager or the coach can only put them in the best position to succeed, give them the information and the latitude to excel, and then if they don't deliver, I like the idea of the coach or the manager taking responsibility for the decisions they made, but we do know in the end it's the players that win these games for you, and ultimately everything we can do is just put them in the best position to hopefully follow through on that successful plan.
Well, Rick, for me in the West Coast trip, it's survive in advance. A lot of coffee up there until 12:30 in the morning. I was there watching, and Sox fans were too, looking forward to today and moving forward throughout the season. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Look forward to doing it again soon, guys.
You're the best. Hey, Rick, make sure there's a picture of Hoodie and I on the concourse. Make sure nobody defaces the picture of me on that side.
I mean, we only got so much security, but we'll try.
Yeah. Appreciate you. See you, man. There he is. Rick Hahn, Executive VP and General Manager of the Chicago White Sox. Carmen Yurko will be live from the PointsBet Sportsbook in Crestwood from 10 until 2. Then we have our special Royal Sox pregame, 2 o'clock with Connor McKnight. And then Len Casper, Darren Jackson, crank it up at 3 for the Sox and the Royals, then the postgame show, then Black and Abdallah. We'll be right back.
World Star.
This is Cap and Jay Hood. Enjoy the show each morning in your Instagrammies. At Cap Jay Hood on Instagram.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN 1000.
Thank you, Rick Hahn, for joining the show. Always insightful and fun to talk to him. We'll talk to, hopefully, Tony La Russa maybe tomorrow. So, excited to watch baseball this afternoon. Again, if it doesn't rain, sit in the backyard and watch the Cubs game and the Sox game. And they're, like, staggered. So, the Cubs are at, what, 12:15, you said? Businessman special?
12:30.
12:30.
Yeah.
In Pittsburgh, and then the White Sox, 305.
310.
310.
Yeah.
At guaranteed rate. So it'll be a lot of fun to see them both.
Cubs actually should bring back the old 305 game with the shadows at 4.
Remember that?
That was a tough game.
Remember asking Rick Sutcliffe, "Do you like those 305 games?" He goes, "The hitters hate them." I loved it because he was a wrist wrapper, they called him. Yeah. And he would hide the ball behind him and wrap his wrist. He said that ball would explode on guys at 95. He'd be like, "Whoa."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cubs lineup is in against Pittsburgh. They'll go with Contreras leading off. Oh, God. Bryant hitting second. Rizzo hitting third. Baez cleanup. Peterson fifth. Mariznick, 6th, Hayward, 7th, Bodie, 8th, and Jake Arrieta on the mound for the Cubs against the Pirate.
Better beat the Pirate today. That's a good lineup right there.
Contreras at the top. I haven't seen a... What am I missing, Miller? The only thing I can remember, a catcher hitting that high in the lineup, either first or second, on a consistent basis. I think Fisk was up there pretty high, was he not? And he hit second some years?
Fisk, I think, hit second. I can't remember a catcher leading off consistently.
Well, yeah, because you're certainly, you know, especially with the emphasis, you asked Rick Hahn last segment about, you know, the importance of a leadoff hitter. With the emphasis now on base percentage, it's a completely different look where, now, most catchers are not going to be able to give you that on-base percentage clip above 350 that you're kind of looking for with an on-base guy, but there are a few in the game, and it's, and because now that's more of what you're focused on, it's something you can say, all right, I could see where catchers from time to time lead off. However, yeah, in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, obviously the emphasis was on speed and having somebody who could steal a base once they did get on base.
That's right.
Which there were very few catchers in baseball because the knees go obviously very quickly. You know who comes to mind who didn't spend long behind the plate? Craig Biggio.
Yes.
When he first entered the league.
He was a catcher.
Correct. But I think that only lasted a year and a half tops.
I think that's right.
Before they moved him to second base, because obviously he was such a good hitter and he had speed to burn, so they wanted to use, you know, they didn't want his knees to go for, you know, go before he even hit 25.
I'm old school in that regard. I still like the speed demon, the on base percentage guy at the top. But I understand Contreras, who's not a bad base runner, by the way. He's not a bad base runner. He's
Contreras
pretty decent.
And he's fast, too.
Yeah.
There's a, you know, like Chris Bryant's not fast, but he's a hell of a base runner.
Yeah.
He learned the fundamentals, how to cut a base. Remember when Joe Maddon got there, he painted the corners of every base blue, just the inside corner. And I remember asking him the first spring, he goes, I've never seen an organization where guys are hitting the outside of the bag, the middle of the bag. He said, you do realize if you hit the corner, you can A, push off, and B, it's a shorter distance.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Like, he had to make a lot of changes.
Yeah, that's one of those things, too, that you think should be ingrained in professional players because, you know, if you have a good coach, you learn that fairly early on in Little League. You know, once you're past the age of like 11 or 12, hopefully you learn how to run the bases.
You know, I really miss speed in the game. So, you know, if we had this lineup cap about 15 years ago, and if Hamilton would have started for the Sox, it would have been like Eaton Hamilton at the top, the Fleas at the top, and then the bulk of it in the middle,
right,
3-7, 3-3.
And then crappy hitter, 8th.
Yeah.
Like a light-hitting shortstop, Gene Alley. Remember Gene Alley?
Yes.
Like, he was the perfect 8 hitter.
Yeah.
Don Kessinger.
And whatever you get from that at the bottom is just gravy, right?
Correct.
I understand the importance of that on-base percentage. That makes sense.
You know what's funny, though? You mentioned Hamilton. If you go back 6-7 years, maybe 10, and Billy Hamilton would be the leadoff hitter for the White Sox.
For sure.
Like,
no doubt.
I mean, he left the game yesterday with hamstring, you know, tightness, but he, just because of his ability to get on base, he would be your leadoff hitter.
Sidebar, may I approach?
Yes, you may.
Craig Biggio caught 4 years in the big leagues. He was called up in June of 1988, took over. He played 50 games that summer at catcher, took over as the regular catcher in 89, won the Silver Slugger Award for catchers, hitting 13 home runs with 60 RBIs. By 91, he was a .295 hitter, making his first All-Star team. Then they started to talk about moving him from behind the plate in order to lengthen his career because of his offensive prowess. 1992, he became the second baseman, played all 162, made his second All-Star game.
I would say that was a good decision.
And he said, moving from catcher to second base, I can't explain to you how hard that was. That's like giving you a bat and telling you, go get a hit off Randy Johnson. Not just stand in the box, but get a hit off him. It was incredibly hard.
Yeah.
How about that? And I think he became a Gold Glover at second.
I think that
a few times.
I believe that's true. But it's just interesting how the game has evolved. And also, hats off to Rick Hahn. Great conversation with him. Transparency by name. It's one thing to be transparent, but transparency by name. The names that we talked about the White Sox in that game against Seattle yesterday, mm-hmm, or how they play, he talked about them by name.
He did. He's very transparent.
You don't get that every day.
You do not. By the way, Biggio won 4 Gold Glove Awards at second base, 94, 95, 96, 97. And then when Jeff Kent signed with Houston in 2003 as a free agent,